The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy listening to you. I don't always agree with everything.
All right, enough of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
That I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
Wait, you're telling me I'm wrong? Disconnect.
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. He's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I right?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Very nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In on this e-person Monday. Be getting to your e-persons very shortly here. Program comes to you from the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Ave Maria Radio Communications with my producer man manning the boards. Sounds like a basketball game, doesn't it? Andrew Kruchek, father of Audra Rose and John. And he tells me Audra Rose, Andrew, is that right? She a teenager now? Audra Rose is 13? Oh, man. And he has never asked me for advice. So apparently he knows what he's doing. Either that or he just doesn't want my advice. Okie dokie. Got a question for you. I don't have a question for you. I'm going to switch monologues right in the middle of my opening monologue. The question I had for you was, is the algorithm raising your child? But that's a monologue for another day. This is one of the classic signs of the Wascoe psychologists. Psychologists, and I worked as an intern for a professor, I think, to earn some money my first year of graduate school, and the professors designed certain studies. Professors like to use college sophomores and rats as their prime subjects, not necessarily in that order. And one of the classic studies used college students. They were told that a new personality test had been developed. This personality test, they believed, would be as accurate as anything out there. So they gave this personality questionnaire to a group of students. Said, take the test, answer as honest as you can, and we will score the test and bring the results back to you. So for a sufficient amount of time, they came back and they gave the students the results, the personality profile of each student. They had them privately read them, and they were to rate how close this profile captured who they were. On a, I forget, a 1 to 5 is a very common scale that psychologists and researchers use. Very high. The majority of the students said it captured them accurately or very accurately. So this test must be every bit as good as it was held up to be, correct? Well, you can expect if you're going to be in one of these psychological experiments in a university college setting, what they're telling you the test is ain't exactly what it is. There is an ulterior research exploration. Each student received the same description as every other student. So there was one personality profile that was given to all the students. And they were asked, how close is this to who you are? The majority said, pretty close. How did they do this? How, in fact, did they actually give a one-size-fits-all description to obviously kids that are all over the spectrum in their personalities? Well, they did it by using descriptions that could be interpreted so many ways. Example. Oftentimes you are slower to feel comfortable in certain social situations, but once you're comfortable, your real self comes out. Now it's kind of like a variant of astrology predictions. Fit anybody. You're going to have some good news come your way today. Make sure you are aware and you heed it. Okay, all right. And that's what they did. And they used broad personality traits. Thoughtful, shy, accomplished. And these traits could be interpreted. That's part of what we do when we describe other people. Let's say there's a relative in your family, and the peak word you would use to describe this relative would be difficult. That's how you see this person. Would all the relatives see this person this way? Or would there be people within your family or extended family who would say, oh, I really like them. They're so much fun to be around, easy to get along with. How is this? You've decided this person's primary personality trait is difficult, hard to get along with. That's how you describe them. Why don't the other people describe them that way? Well, obviously, he treats them differently. Well, there's some truth to that. That's obviously part of it. But I think the other part of it is pretty much all personality traits are context specific. They come and go, they are stronger or weaker depending upon the situation. You have a relative that you're not real comfortable around. Around this person, you're kind of quiet. You're careful about what you say. You know that they don't necessarily agree or approve of the way you live your life, perhaps of your religion or your political views or the fact that you raise your children a certain way. So what you do is you guard what you say when you're around them. And if I were to ask them how they see you, they'd say, I don't know. She's kind of an uneasy, anxious person. She just doesn't seem to be relaxed. But then, for example, your spouse's sister is easygoing. She thinks a lot like you, and she feels very comfortable allowing you to be who you are. Around her, you're anything but nervous. You joke. You're fun-loving. You have a great time. She would describe you as pleasant, easygoing, and fun. Now, both of them see you radically differently. So which is your true personality trait? Are you nervous and anxious, or are you easygoing and fun? Well, that depends. Depends upon who you're around. Depends upon the circumstances. Personality is very, very much influenced by the environment. That's why so many parents are absolutely shocked when they go to a parent-teacher conference and this kid who's driving them nuts at home, who's defiant and belligerent and difficult and emotionally explosive, the teacher says, oh, he's wonderful. Oh, gosh, such a delightful young man. He is the most pleasant. And the parent's thinking, what? Wait, I got the wrong school here. I got the wrong school district. Here, let me scroll up a picture on my phone. Is this a kid? A little brown-haired kid? Gapping his teeth? Who are you? They don't understand this. How can this boy be like that in this classroom environment, but yet at home with us, he's Cujo? Well, A lot of it depends upon his perception of the environment. For whatever the reason, he perceives school as more predictable in their discipline, and mom and dad is less predictable in their discipline, or weaker in their discipline, or argumentative, or frustrated, whatever it might be. And he reacts accordingly. So to say he's strong-willed, he's stubborn, he's defiant, he's oppositional, none of those descriptions the teacher sees. So which is the son? Is he strong-willed and defiant? Or is he pleasant and cooperative? Which is it? Well, he's both. Depends on the situation. The developers of that test, the Aunt Fanny test, they called it, because they said it was so vague that it could describe anybody's hypothetical Aunt Fanny. It's a great test. When I come back, I will attempt to be open-minded in this circumstance. I might not be open-minded somewhere else.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Life can be overwhelming, leaving you feeling anxious, alone, or even in despair. That's why the nonprofit Revive app was created, to help you navigate the darkness and discover the light. With Revive, confidential conversations with a certified spiritual companion are always just a tap away. And right now, your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3. Let them help you find joy in tomorrow.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing our pilgrimage to charming Ireland and its rich Catholic heritage. The shrines are nestled in the quaint Emerald Isle. Lovely people, marvelous food, sweeping vistas. Everyone's favorite is Mass at Our Lady of Knock and its Eucharistic apparition. We hope you can join us in August, along with our Irish chaplain, Father James Conlon.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
Hi, I'm Angie. Did you know a billboard can save a baby's life? It's true. You can make a difference this holiday by helping us spread the pro-life message to reach those who are struggling with an unplanned pregnancy. Our billboards and ads feature our 800 hotline for help, which connects people to pro-life centers nationwide that can assist with free medical help, baby supplies, and more. Won't you join us in this season of giving? Please make a gift today. Visit ProLifeForAcrossAmerica.org. That's ProLifeForAcrossAmerica.org.
This is Cy Kellett. Join me for Catholic Answers Live. It's 2 hours dedicated to Catholic apologetics and evangelization. Designed for Catholics and non-Catholics alike, it's your opportunity to hear from and talk with some of the leading apologists and theologians in the church today. You've got questions? We've got Catholic answers. Catholic Answers Live, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
I remember when we dropped our daughter off at college. It was hard. It was really, really hard because she hadn't been accepted there. Okay, nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. This is, my Catholic son is 25. Ready to settle down, get married. He has met a very sweet evangelical girl. Okay, now, as I've said oftentimes, I don't recall reading these because I selected them a while back for the e-person bag. So I will read the first few sentences and see where they go. So already the stage is set. A very sweet evangelical girl. Okay, now what's your image here? You're thinking, all right, nice, put together, faith-filled lady. They've been together about a month, but they want a Christ-centered life together. Great. Okay. So looking good, sounding good. She is willing to find out more about the Catholic Church. Sounding even better. Okay. Now here's the big but. Unfortunately, she has had some serious trauma. I don't know the specifics. And she has been diagnosed bipolar. She suffers from depression, has had suicidal thoughts, and has abused alcohol. She's not done well managing herself with medication, although her parents, whom she lives with, have tried to help her. But she wants to do well now for my son. Okay, now first of all, got it? Known each other 1 month. Way short. Way short. Okay, 1 month. Mom describes her as a very sweet evangelical girl. Wants to have a Christ-centered life. All wonderful. But now she's bringing up all of this past. And it sounds rough. And it sounds like, in many respects, it's still rough. Not managing her medication, suicidal thoughts. And I didn't read this, but parenthetically, Mom says, at the least, okay, about the suicidal thoughts. Which, does that mean that she had even attempted it? However, my son has already caught her in a lie about alcohol. In other words, she's still struggling with alcohol. So here's a girl that he's met, known a month, and seems like she's just a sweet girl, but stuff's coming out. He just revealed all this to me, and I told him that he can't fix her. And that he can't have a healthy relationship until she is healthy. And she needs to do that for herself outside of any relationship with my son. Well, I think it's kind of great. The implication is the son listened to her. Pretty cool. He seemed to find relief with this because he was struggling. Well, what was he struggling about? Well, he was probably struggling about with the fact that what's his duty toward her? He likes her, but yet at the same time, he's scared to death. Not only of her history, but what's still reverberating into the present. He doesn't want to abandon her, but he isn't sure what his role should be. Well, now see, when you start worrying about your roles in a situation like this, rather than saying, I want to get to know this person and this is a potential lifelong partner, no, what's my role? I would see if he was in my office, I'd be asking a whole lot of questions about this idea of he has a role. I told him, this is Mom talking again, he should stop seeing her regularly and give her an opportunity to commit her helping herself completely. His question to me, so my question to you, Dr. Ray, is should he wait for her, and if so, how long? And what, if any, contact should he have with her? What should his role be? As an aside, she sings and performs locally, and he wants to know, would it be wise to see her performance if she asks? Well, several things here. Obviously, I can't know. I can't make some definitive conclusion about her potential to straighten herself out. I can't know that. However, at least as you're describing it, Mom, this pretty complex picture. And the more complex the picture, the more likely it is to continue. And if it resolves itself, only slowly. I have so many people in my office who are in the midst of turbulent marriages. And as we talk, we find out that one of them had a really ugly adolescence and young adulthood in so many ways. And the spouse who married them thought, well, okay, now this stability of a marriage and a helpmate will really kind of settle the whole thing down. And it didn't. The personality struggles were still there, and they just translated into marriage, into getting along with another person. Now, I'm not saying that it can't happen, that people can't mature out of a bad, bad history. But if she's presently still lying, the question is, how much should he see her? Well, see, if he's got guilt, if he's saying, if I pull out on her now, it'll just throw her into a tailspin and she'll head back to some of these same things that she was struggling with that she wants to be free of. But yet that can't be the basis of a relationship. If he goes and sees her perform, unless that conveys to her that he wants to continue this relationship, when he doesn't, then he probably would be wise not to. If, on the other hand, she understands he's just sort of watching her perform because he thinks she's good at it, okay, it might be safe. They've only known each other a month. You know, at the very least, he has to have wide open eyes into the situation as it unfolds. Now, this is interesting because I got a follow-up email from Mom. Dear Dr. Ray, sometimes God works in mysterious ways. Sometimes it's a lot quicker and more direct. Literally 1 hour after I sent this question to you, my son let me know that she sent him a text saying they were too different. Well, from the brief description of the son and the brief description of the girl, that would seem to be the case. My son didn't like the fact that it came in a text. Well, that would tell him something too, wouldn't it? That it came in a text? But he recognized the whole separation as the best thing. I told my son it was a great blessing, and now he can move on with no guilt. Okay, that adds to my question in the first E person. How much guilt was he feeling if he pulled out of what looked to be a very risky relationship, and if he pulled out of it, he would feel like, oh no, I'm just another thing in her life that has sent her into a funk. Maybe she thought he was too different because he was Catholic. And who knows where her evangelical sensibilities are. But she thought, no, I'm not really all that interested in becoming Catholic. We are too different. So, to put it crudely, as it might be said, he dodged a bullet. This was a situation that was potentially, at the very least, complex. And at the very worst, something that could have a lot of downsides, implications. Okay. So that's that. I have seen many people who are struggling in a marriage or even in a long-term relationship because they didn't get to know the person well. And by the way, this doesn't mean live with them. It has nothing to do with it. You can get to know somebody in so many different ways. When getting to know them means not where they leave their shoes under the bed or in the closet. It means who they are as a person, how they treat people. You can see that, how they treat loved ones in their lives or hated ones in their lives. Yeah, time is such a great revealer.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You remember the time I said on the air, go to confession, and when you're done, go out and have a big ice cream soda. Celebrate. And a man wrote to me, he says, you know, I hadn't gone to confession in 30 years. Do you mind if I went and had a pizza? I said, oh, have 20 pizzas.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
What is wrong with artificial birth control? The Catholic Catechism explains that it unnaturally breaks the bond between the two essential elements of the conjugal act, the unitive and the procreative. The unitive element is the mutual self-giving of the spouses to one another. The procreative element is the openness to the act's potential and natural end, life. The truth of marital love is falsified when we separate what God has decreed as inherent and inseparable to the marriage act. We don't unnaturally separate eating from its natural end, nourishment. When we wish to control our weight, we abstain from food. Thus, if for just reasons we wish to control birth during a fertile period, we should abstain from sexual relations. In an age of ecological awareness, church-approved natural family planning, which is both healthy and free, is cause for environmental applause. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
I would always hear from different people at non-Catholic churches that Catholics were going to hell or that they really didn't know who the Lord was. The Catholic Church is not all what people say it is. I mean, it's completely different. There's so many stereotypes. It's very possible to know the Lord, and it's very possible to have a relationship with God in the Catholic Church. I believe I was born into the Catholic Church, and that's where I belong.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
I remember one time, more than once, one of my little daughters, probably about age 5, said to her mother, I don't have to listen to you. You're not my boss. My wife turned to me and said, Raymond, do you wish to deal with her, please? I said, sure, honey. So I took her into the other room and sat her down. Sat down across from her. And I said, Can you teach me how to do that? I didn't. All right, this is Dr. Ray here, E-Person Monday. Before I go to this mom's E-Person. Many, many, many years ago, I was on a radio program called Catholic Family Radio. It was my foray into radio, what's the word I'm looking for, program, somewhat like this. And I had a question from a mom who called in and said that she had found some things on her daughter's diary. Now, this was back before really cell phones were big on the scene. This is way back, 25 years ago, maybe more. And she read it and was aghast at the language, at the proclivities, the attractions. So mom confronted her daughter with this. Daughter exploded. Daughter flat out exploded. You have no right to read my diary. That's private. That's mine. And I made the observation that, so what happened, and mom was starting to doubt herself. That's why she called in, by the way. She doubted herself. Mom became the perp, as opposed to finding out what's going on with the daughter. Mom was immediately thrown onto the defensive, And interestingly enough, if I recall correctly, Mom had talked to some people. And the consensus was, well, you know, that is hers. You don't want to be a snoop. You know, it's her private stuff. And Mom said, I didn't go to seek it out. It was on a dresser and it was open. So I looked. It wasn't, well, let me dig underneath her mattress and see if I can find her diary and see what it says, et cetera, et cetera. Well, along that same vein, is it sinful to read my teenager's text messages to see what they're up to? Well, right away, quick, I will answer that. How could that be a sin? I mean, you could say, is it intrusive? You could say, is it snooping? You could say, am I being a little too suspicious? You could say all that, but sinful? There's no moral issue involved here. As a matter of fact, I think it's smart to know your kids' text messages. Absolutely. Why would you not? Why would you not? If they're benign and harmless, great. Cool. Just nice stuff. But I think even more than 50% of the time, they're not. They're not. The language used, the sexuality in them, the plotting, the conniving, the misleading, the gender confusion, all this stuff. The forming a relationship with the opposite sex at a very early place in life. Oh my gosh, the text messages are just an avenue, as Mom has found out. Through this, she says, I've discovered that one of my daughters, age 19, is involved in same-sex dating. And while the other is still heterosexual, 16, but no longer believes in waiting for marriage to be sexually intimate with a man. Neither are open to discussion about faith and morals. They think my beliefs are archaic. They immediately shut down when I broach these topics. Okay. Well, now you got two situations here. You got a young adult who says, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get into a same-sex relationship. Now, the question becomes, and this is what I would ask Mom if I were sitting in my office with her, I say, was, did your daughter show any kind of gender confusion growing up? Was she interested in boys growing up? And if Mom says yes, then my guess would be that her text relationships and her internet exploring and all of that helped her, directed her to, let's see what a same-sex relationship is like. Or the girl that she had contact with pushed her in that direction. And I have to see. Okay. The daughter who is so far heterosexual says, look, I'm looking for a physical relationship here, Mom. I think your ideas on sex and your religion's teaching on all this is way, way, way back, throwback, Neanderthal, not going to do it, not going to follow it. So here's what Mom said. Should I stop reading their texts? Why would you think that? Now, of course, one might say, well, the 19-year-old, she's legally an adult. She can do what she wants. Well, yeah, she can. If she doesn't live in your home. I mean, there is a certain condition you can still have for her living in your home, can't you? Then she says, I use my findings, in other words, what I see, to pray for them more specifically. Well, Mom, you don't need to pray for them specifically as long as you pray for their moral development and returning to the faith. You don't have to say specifically, well, that she doesn't feel this way about this woman whose name is blah, blah. God knows all that. Am I fooling myself that this is helping? All right, I'm looking at the clock here, and I got about 1 minute. I want to talk about this a little more on the other side of the break, but as an intro to my post-break continuation. First of all, reading their texts, especially the 16-year-old, is something that I think every parent should do, flat out. You can't just assume, oh, therefore they have total privacy regarding what they want to do, what they want to say, who they want to talk to, whether they want to have a fans-only page, whatever it is they want to use that phone for, you have no right to know it. Excuse me? Even with the 19-year-old, you can say, I do not want to condone or be a part of all the things you're planning to do as I allow you to live here. You can do that as a parent. I'm not telling you to do it, but you can do it. You'd be well within your rights to say, as a parent, this is how I see this, and I don't want to be a part of just simply giving you all the conditions and good things of home, but yet saying you're going to do whatever you want, whenever you want, however you want. I will talk more on the other side. This is Dr. Ray. Thanks for joining me.
'60 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The seventh commandment, you shall not steal. The seventh commandment forbids theft, that is, unjustly taking or keeping another's property against the reasonable will of the owner. It also prohibits deliberate retention of goods lent or of objects lost. It prohibits business fraud, paying unjust wages, forcing up prices, and taking advantage of the ignorance or the hardship of another person. It prohibits the appropriation and use for private purposes of common goods. Also, work poorly done, tax evasion, forgery of checks, invoices, excessive expenses, and waste. Under the seventh commandment is also tucked our social justice teachings, because if I have two coats, one of them belongs to the poor, and I reasonably ought to give what belongs to them, because God gave all the goods of this world for all the people of this world.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Are you passionate about Jesus? Are you zealous for Jesus? Are you fervent for Jesus? Are we fervent for the gospel? Are we passionate about helping this world come to know him? Is that true? It's not true for most people in the church. Is Jesus my best friend? Is he your best friend? I'm looking around the church. There's a set of guys in here who have great man caves. As I was praying this morning, I felt like the Lord said, hey, when are you going to come to my man cave? Like, you guys think a flat screen TV is really cool. Well, you should see what I got to offer. Because I and I alone, he says, can really give you what it is you're longing for. Whoever it is we're rooting for right now, they're going to lose eventually. Or whatever it is that's occupying our time, one day we're going to realize it really wasn't that important. Why aren't we hanging out with the one who alone can show us what life is really all about? When was the last time you hung out in the Lord's man cave?
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor is In. This is the Variant E-Person Monday, where I attempt to work my way through the emails that I get from folks. This particular one, I began last segment to quickly summarize. Mom starts out the email with, is it sinful to read my teenager's text messages to see what they're up to? And I immediately said, this is not a matter of sin. It's a matter of judgment. This is a matter of, I think you're wise to do it, although there would be those who would disagree and say, no, that's snooping. You don't do it. It's just invading your children's private space. Well, in doing this, she's discovered that the 19-year-old is involved in a same-sex dating relationship, and the other no longer believes in waiting for marriage to be physically intimate with a guy. Neither want to discuss it. Neither want to talk about it. They think mom's just a throwback to the Middle Ages, actually the Mesozoic era in her beliefs. So here's mom's question, which is kind of surprising. Should I stop reading their texts? Mom, first of all, I think wise parents know what goes on that phone. I think that's absolutely critical now. You can't just assume that kids are going to go, I'm going to be morally responsible and I'm going to make good judgments and I'm going to have just a good fun time writing texts. I'd say at least 50% of the time, parents would be shocked at their kids' texts, if nothing else but the vile language they use. So you have every right, Mom, to read their texts. Not only is that not sinful, it is, in my opinion, a very wise parental perspective. Now, what do you do about it? You decide. Your daughter says, I'm going to have a same-sex relationship. Mom, I'm going to live here, and you're going to have to just accept it. Okay, she can do that. And you can accept it, or you can say, no, I'm not going to be a party to allowing you to pursue something like this. And I said before the break, if they were in my office, I would ask Mom, if she's coming to me saying, what do I do about this? I would ask Mom. I'd say, was there gender identity issues? Did this girl seem to be developing quite normally? And like so many young people now, a significant minority percentage, they decide later that all of a sudden they're no longer heterosexual exclusively, that they are either binary. No, they're non-binary, or they're generally open to relationships either way. So that said, Mom has to decide. Now, with a 16-year-old, she's still under your auspices, legally and otherwise. Interesting. You can probably assume that that younger child is going to use her phone to set up situations that she wants to pursue. You can assume that. Now, I'm reading between the lines here, Mom. And I'm looking at your question about, is it sinful? And should I stop reading their text? And I'm looking at that, and forgive me if I am wrong, but there's a lot of insecurity on your part as a parent. As though, what am I allowed to do here? And I would further guess and speculate that if you were to take some kind of stand on this, you're quite frightened by how the kids would react, by how both of them would react. Most parents are, by the way, when they find out that their kids have used phones for purposes that the parents would believe are not good for them or are immoral, and the parents try to put a stop to it, the kids go ballistic. And the parents are shocked by the intensity of the meltdown, by the intensity of the resistance, the refusal, the threatening to totally chuck the relationship. And the parent is afraid of this, very, very much afraid of this. And as a result, they try to find an uneasy avenue, which generally, in my experience, just gets worse. So you'll have to decide how you want to do this. But I would guess now that your girls know, because you've seen their texts, that they're going to be much more careful about deleting them. You're not going to see anything at all now. So you can watch their behavior. But another question I would have is, when did the girls get the phones? It's a very simple relationship, a linear relationship. The earlier they got it, the more likely they are by age 16 and 17 to be doing things with that phone that pulls them away from the way they were raised. It's a simple given of the phone. In all of human history, how you were raised was the main influence. It isn't anymore. Now the main influence, if the parents allow it, can be the culture at large. It can be peers from anywhere, anyway, anyhow. It can be social media. It can be the algorithm. It can be anything that convinces a young person that the way you were raised needs to be jettisoned. Throw it off. It's suffocating. It is stifling. And the only way the parent can really fight this in the short term, anyway, you can obviously fight it by being a wonderful parent with a lot of love and stability in your home and all the good things that come from a loving family. But the other thing is, you don't give one of these things that early. And most parents do, by the way. If your child does not have a smartphone by age 13, you're in a small minority of parents. Small minority. By 15, I don't know, you might have to go to Nepal, somewhere in the Himalayas, find a kid who doesn't have one. I exaggerate, but not much. maybe you'd have to go to Tierra del Fuego. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me that the girls have now decided that mom's way of looking at things really just bears no usefulness to them. And now she has to decide what she's planning on doing about the phones and the relationships and what they're pursuing. So if she's the younger one is actually pursuing having physical relationships with guys, pretty good chance you could have a little baby on the scene. Dr. Ray.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
As the new year approaches, it's the perfect moment to check off a big resolution early and wrap your family in the gift of security. Planning ahead shows your love in a big way, ensuring your wishes shine through no matter what life brings. At MyCatholicWill.com/AVE, you can create your will at no cost from the privacy of your home. The process is straightforward. Go to MyCatholicWill.com/AVE and prioritize your family's peace of mind. You're feeling overwhelmed, carrying burdens no one else sees? This Giving Tuesday, Ave Maria Radio wants to offer you a gift. On December 2nd, we're dedicating a special Mass and lifting up the prayer intentions of our radio family. You've helped us proclaim the gospel. Now let us pray for you. Visit AveMariaRadio.net to share your prayer request on December 2nd. Let's lift each other up in hope.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
Last segment of Living Right with Dr. Ray, E-Person Monday. We have a married granddaughter who has a 5-year-old girl and just had a second baby in early September. The 5-year-old is extremely smart, but her parents have been using the soft parenting approach, okay? Otherwise known probably as gentle parenting. Nice touch to it, doesn't it? Everybody would want to be a gentle parent. Who wouldn't want to be a gentle parent? The problem is the defining characteristics of what gentle parenting means. Okay, so where are we at? Interestingly enough, her mother was not raised this way. depending on the day or her mood, the little girl has become increasingly less cooperative at home. That's no surprise. Gentle parenting operates out of a philosophy that children are naturally cooperative, and if you just use the right expressions, you reason properly, you are soft in your approach, the children are eager to get along. Now, there are a few like that. They're not the norm. They're kids. So they want to do what they want to do. That's not bad. It's who they are. She's been known to throw some major tantrums with hitting and threats to break things. Now, here's my question. Do the parents yet have any thoughts or insight about how their particular approach isn't working? Because what I see happening in this situation, these kinds of situations, is that the parents think they just got a tough kid. It's got a tough kid. That's all. Because if she were a normal kid, gentle parenting would be working, because it sounds so wonderful on paper. So something must be wrong with this child. She's strong-willed, or she's difficult, or she's oppositional, or she's defiant. Something is happening here. However, so far, she is well-behaved at school. Well, where did all that nastiness go? Now, I will say this. If they continue along this particular parenting trajectory, pretty good chance they're going to start getting calls from the school. But she has been known to throw a fit or two at her daycare. Aha! Now, I don't know how the daycare would interpret this, but typically what we do is we point to the kid. We say, wow, what's making her this way? Look at her. Something about her personality. Something about who she is. And the vast majority of the time, it is the discipline structure in a loving home. Not an erratic, not a harsh discipline. So many people think discipline is automatically that. It's not. Gentle parenting thinks it is. But firm, loving, calm discipline. She's hitting people. At age five, she's hitting people. I mean, I never would have even dreamed of swinging at one of my parents. From the earliest days of my life, I realized that was a bridge too far. She has a stable home life. Well, and I've found that more often than not, you do have a pretty stable and somewhat well-educated parenting, because they're the ones who look at this and go, well, it really sounds pretty sophisticated, sounds pretty psychologically enlightened, and I sure would like to do this. I don't like to send a kid to a corner. I mean, it seems kind of rough when I have to discipline them and exert my will over theirs. Can't we all just get along? I mean, it speaks to what is a natural desire of most of us, just to have a soft, smooth, easygoing relationship with our kids. The irony, the grand irony to this whole thing is that gentle parenting leads to a nasty relationship in so many cases. And calm, firm, loving discipline leads to a better relationship, because you don't have all these throwing fits and kicking and becoming difficult. Mom and dad seem to be stymied about proper parenting. See, there it is, proper parenting, psychologically correct parenting. They're searching. They want to know, how are we to do this? Instead of saying, you know, that's a pretty nasty fit. I'm going to do something about it. There's going to be some consequences for a fit like that. You can't just do that. But no, that kind of simple, straightforward reasoning has been stripped from them. Making a long story short, Dr. Ray, what books do you recommend? There we go. That's the line I wanted that might help us help them. Well, if they're open, and this is the big if, Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime is a book I've written. It's 20-some years old now. Very, very heavy into common discipline problems. 107 of the most common discipline questions I get asked from parents. Setting them up to be calm, resolute, firm in their discipline, so that they're predictable, so that the child realizes, gee, this is mom and dad, this is how they look at things, and this is what they're going to do. Of my 10 kids, we never, ever had any 5-year-olds who spit and kicked us. And my kids have had some very, very early bad life experiences. They were adopted and adopted at a later age, but we never had that. And then one of the reasons we didn't is not because I'm such a great disciplinarian, my wife's a better disciplinarian than I am, but because early on we made it very clear, not through talk but through action and consequences, that that stuff is going to lead to some consequences that are going to be quite unlikable to you. So by the time they were 5 and 6, we didn't have that anymore. It was gone. But I remember one lady that I respect an awful lot, mom of many children and a very thoughtful lady, and she said, You know, I'm seeing so many 8-year-olds throwing fits like 2-year-olds. The fit domain used to belong to early preschoolers. Now, it's being allowed with 8 and 10 and 12 and 15. Gotta go. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Walk with God. Don't throw any sinful fits with God. Not good, because he loves you lots. I'm Dr. Ray.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.